locked in to another episode of The Curious Wire. The Curious Wire. With the most curious person in multifamily. We're not trying to sell you anything here. We just want you to learn real things that will help you elevate your career, challenge you to think and be curious. Join us on this journey to challenge the status quo. Let's go.
So we have a guest, and the way we do this, we have the guest introduce himself. So go ahead.
Hello, I'm Joe Summers. I'm the VP at Fetch. Been in the industry since January of 1999, so been a part of a lot of change the past 23 years.
Are you the VP of something? You just said, I'm the VP.
Oh.
Did I? VP of sales?
I'm the VP of sales.
Got it.
I'm the VP of everything.
No, I like how you roll.
I'm just kidding.
You have a lot of experience building sales teams, and so I want to talk about, I want to pick your brain. What do you do to build a team?
It varies.
First, can you tell how many teams you've built?
Yeah, I have built.
I know you don't like talking about yourself, but
5 or 6 teams over my 23-year career. I've been on the leadership side for 15 years. I was on the sales side, building 2 different companies on the East Coast and then nationally, and then transitioned to the leadership side about 15 years ago. I've built teams from scratch, and I've inherited teams, and they both come with their different challenges and goals and objectives. I mean, to answer pretty quickly, when you inherit a team, it's a little bit different, right? The first thing you have to do is earn trust. You have to believe and not just preach, but practice radical candor. My team, if they hear this, is going to laugh at me because there's 3 pillars I always talk about in building a team, whether you're inheriting one or you're building one, and that's transparency, collaboration, and accountability. And if you do those things right, you actually build that trust. You create an open forum for your people to feel empowered. I empower them to teach me something new every day, and vice versa. You know, and I think they know that I'll get in the trenches and push a broom right alongside of them. I don't care if you're the janitor or the CEO.
Well, the goal here is very specific. So if you go deep, like how do you build that trust? So I understand these ingredients that you're using. Yep. Your transparency, your accountability, and
collaboration.
Yep. You come in, you're inheriting a team. How do you build that trust? What does 30, 60, 90 look like?
I think it's, first of all, proving that you know what you're talking about and having them feel empowered to know that you have their back, but that you can also, any good sales team, any good leader, in my opinion, isn't meant to be a dictator or to preach things down. They're meant to clear a path in front of their team, right? Remove obstacles, remove things that may have been a pain point for a long time. And that's basically what I do when I come in. I quickly identify their different personalities. I have a psych degree. I love people. And I also feel that I have an adaptive personality, and I get along with different types of people. I'll talk about the current sales team at Fetch. I love the team because every single person on the team is different. They all complement each other's strengths and weaknesses, and they all operate differently. So really identifying what makes that person tick and what people need less attention and what people need more attention. And really, again, the objective is still to clear a path in front of them so they can be successful and not have the stressors. It's already stressful enough being a salesperson, right? Most of it is, you know, self-inflicted stress. So just mitigating as much as that as possible to make sure that that path is clear. And that's how you really gain the trust, where you practice what you preach. I don't mind. I love sales presentations are the favorite part of my job. And I get to do less of them now than I ever have before, just as we're scaling the company.
Yeah, I like what you said about having their back. You know, conversations that I have with my team is like, I'm going to go to bat for you. You know, you make sure that, you know, you follow through.
Right.
And therefore, you know, what I'm going to say, we want to make sure that there's nothing that somebody could give pushback on. Yeah. And we show up.
That's the collaboration and accountability part of it, right? Hey,
yeah.
I'm going to do what I said for you. Make sure you do what you said for me. And we're going to hold each other accountable. And I challenge my team every day to hold me accountable. I make mistakes every single day. And I think a lot of times when you inherit a team, they are sometimes scared to make a mistake. And I actually encourage mistakes. Some of the best things that have ever happened to me have been born out of the ashes of mistake, right? And you learn from it. As long as you learn from it and move on and don't fall into a pattern of insanity, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting something different, you're going to see success from that. And I encourage my people to fail. You should encourage your people to fail, because that's when they really learn. And you talk about developing salespeople for future leadership if they have a desire for that. I think being comfortable and taking risks and making mistakes is part of being a leader, and they need to learn that and learn that, mitigate the consequences of any mistakes, obviously, but you can't be scared to do that.
Yeah, to talk about learning from mistakes, we sat down to record this and the recorder died and I had to go get batteries and I bought an extra pair, so hopefully I learned my lesson there. Do you have one-on-ones with your team? If you do, how frequently you're doing it? What do they look like?
That's a great question. I love weekly one-on-ones with direct reports. Unfortunately, I'm in a position right now. I just hired support underneath of me.
So go back when you did. What did it look like?
Basically, I like them to bring an agenda, because I think I don't get on my one-on-one saying, okay, how do your sales look? What's going on? That should be happening on a consistent basis. One-on-ones are dedicated time to that person, right? What's important to them? What are they working on? They may need help with that we haven't talked about. I ask for an agenda from them and really help drive from that. I try and keep my agenda items a lot lower because it's more about them. Currently, I don't get to have weekly one-on-ones because I have such a large organization. I have, you know, sales reporting to me, marketing reporting to me, account management reporting to me. So
so what would you do? Let's say you have a VP of sales, a CRO who's doing these one-on-ones and their team is not coming with the agenda. They're just, you know, it takes time. How do you pull that out of them? You know, you're 6 months in and everything's running smoothly and they can't wait to meet with you when they have stuff they want to talk to you. How do you get to there?
Well, I have an open door policy, so if they can't wait for the, like I always say, that one-on-one time is for them. If we ever have to move it, shift it, whatever, they know they have the ability to do that. That is their time.
Yeah.
But they all know that I have an open door policy. Even if I'm meetings, I have Slack, I have text. I'm generally very responsive unless my phone's in my pocket and I'm in a meeting. So if you look at it that way, I mean, I'm talking to them on a constant basis, specifically not just when I need something, but if they need something, they know they can reach out to me. So that one-on-one time is, I like to look at it a little bit differently. Sometimes we don't even talk about work, quite honestly. I mean, we talk about things they may be dealing with in their personal life. And, you know, I'm actually the oldest person on the team. So I've had experiences, you know.
You don't look the oldest.
Yeah, thank you. My kids are in their, you know, 17 and 13. So I also have experiences with kids, and I have people on the team that have, you know, one-year-olds, and they're just asking for advice. And, you know, my advice is always cherish every second, because time's the most valuable asset on the planet. But that's what I love about them, is it gives us an opportunity to have, let them have that time.
You know what's amazing is, and it's a hard balance, I find, where you don't want to get into people's personal business, but whatever's going on in their personal life is usually going to affect them. Yep. Your people's, you know, closest relationships, if something is not going well, that is going to impact them. And so the approach is not like, well, that can impact you at work, but it's like, if there's something I could do to help you there, you want to be there. And so I think it takes a little time and trust to go that route. But, you know, you talk about work-life balance. It's like whatever's happening in your life is probably going to show up somewhere in your performance.
Yeah, and, you know, let's be honest. Human beings, when you develop relationships, it can't just be about work, right? And I never push anything, but I'm very transparent about what I've dealt with in my life. I haven't had the best life and the best you know, growing up situation, and I have people on the team that have had similar situations and same background, and I think it's refreshing to everyone that, like, I'm an open book. I mean, you've known me for a few years now. I mean, you know that nothing's off the table to talk about with me. I am who I am, and it's because of my experiences. So I tend to like to share that with people so they feel like they're not alone, right? Like, hey, I hate the saying we're all in the same boat. That's not true. But there are situations that even if you take a bit of what worked for me or what worked for a friend of mine that I took, you know, that's what really matters. So
yeah, something that I just thought of recently is like every challenge that I go through now becomes a learning moment that I could use for my team. And so then I tell them, when you're having a challenge, that's going to be a learning moment that you're going to tell somebody on your team.
Yep.
and it keeps repeating. And like, I've had people come back and be like, I'm not just making something up. Like, these are things, some are further back and some are more recent that I've gone through or going through. And also just having somebody to listen, or if somebody has something and they need to share it, is extremely valuable.
It's valuable, but it also does create that trust that we talked about. And look, I may be an open book and talk about things, but anything anybody tells me, I know is confidential, right? I'm not going to talk about those things. And I think that, you know, that also goes a long way.
So. That's awesome. What would be, before we wrap up, your advice to someone who's on a sales team who wants to become a leader?
Really evaluate your skill set and what you want to do. Leadership doesn't come with more money. I'm very transparent in the fact that I want my best salespeople making more money than me. It's not about that, right? You have to want something to drive you harder than money. And for me, I think kids made me a lot more patient, but I enjoy parenting my kids. I enjoy coaching their sports teams, and I enjoy coaching a sales team. So you have to let that drive you. One of the hardest things that I had to learn is I'm an athlete, so scoring a goal is getting new clients and contracts, right? So when you switch to leadership, you have to find something else to drive you. And basically, parenthood really helped me learn to live vicariously through my team. And every time they succeed, that's what drives me. I don't want any attention on me. If there's attention on my sales team, that's what makes me proud and lets me know I'm doing my job. Like, and that's a hard lesson to learn, actually. Yeah. And that's not for every salesperson, you know. So they think all the glory is in leadership, but guess what? I'm usually in the thick of the mess more than I'm in the thick of the fun stuff, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And just to finish up with a few rapid-fire random questions, book recommendation.
There's a ton. I'm rereading Influence.
Supposed to do rapid fire.
I'm rereading Influence right now.
Okay.
Psychology of Persuasion. My buddy said that there was a new version, so I just started rereading that because I haven't read it in 10 years.
Okay. Favorite food?
Before my gluten allergy, pizza every day of the week. Sushi and pizza.
Favorite vacation spot?
My heart's in the mountains. My wife's heart is in the beach. Every 5 years, we go to Negril, Jamaica. So I'd say that, but almost any mountain is my preference.
Awesome. And last, what is, in the last 6 to 12 months, favorite purchase?
All right, this is going to sound bad. My favorite purchase has been two things. One, my new stand-up desk that is powered. I used to have a Vera desk that you had to manually lift, and everything would fall off of it. Second, and I know this sounds bougie, I was anti, but I love electric cars. I did get a Tesla.
Cool.
And it's scary, but it's amazing.
I want to get a ride in that.
It's a smart car. It takes a couple weeks to adjust. So.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you.